Hello, and welcome to Barks Remarks, the podcast where we talk about the stories from the legendary Carl Barks, creator of Scrooge McDuck and writer and artist of the greatest Donald and Scrooge comics of all time. Join us as we explore his longer adventure stories in their chronological publishing order. We'll talk about what makes them so enduring, their historical context, and how well they hold up today. So get out your reprint and get ready to enjoy our remarks.
Welcome back to Barks Remarks. I'm Mark Severino, a grown man who loves Duck comics, loves talking about the stories of Carl Barks, and I do really enjoy stories about and set in Florida. And we've got a really interesting one to talk about today. We're going to be covering the Carl Barks, the early 60s, Carl Barks adventure, That's No Fable. And to do so, I have a returning guest. Morten Guldberg is back. Welcome to you, Morten.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being here.
Absolutely. It's great to have a longtime fan. That's the role you're filling today. I've got to ask, you're based in Norway, which is very different from sunny Florida, where the Ducks are going to be spending their time, or at least they're going to be flashing back to their time. Have you ever gotten to visit the States and maybe Florida in particular?
No, I have been to the States just once. I've visited New Orleans, so never been to Florida, but it is sort of Florida adjacent and a little bit of the same climate I expect. And we did go on a trip to the swamps and into the, you know, we got to see alligators and all of that. So I have some visual and real life references.
Yeah, that's great. Because as you say, the Louisiana swamps are not too far removed from the swamps of Florida. I myself have been to Florida. I got to go to Walt Disney World when I was like 12, I think. I never went into the Everglades, but we did visit an alligator farm, and I had quite a lot of fun. I got to see Gomek, the largest saltwater crocodile in the Western Hemisphere. That's a memory that's burned into my 12-year-old brain. But we get to talk about, boy, this is really such a Florida set story too. It's interesting to me because it's like, I'm sure, Morten, that you know the meme that goes around today, Florida man, right? Is that something that rings a bell?
Yeah, of course. It's social media has brought us all together, so that's not so very localized to the United States. I'm very much familiar with it.
Right, exactly. I figure that the world had been flattened enough that you knew the idea of the Florida man, the a little bit out there, a little bit day class Florida person who's going to get into a lot of trouble. Florida really has like this vibe. I think you know what you're getting when you set a story in Florida. It's famous for its like hyper development. It's famous for its like snowbirds, you know, people who don't live there except during the winter time. Some of that stuff, it's interesting to see it. Like really, you can see some of the origins of it playing out in this Carl Barks comic from the early 60s. So I will be interested in getting kind of your perspective on this story as an international, you know, someone who knows the Barks stories from international perspective. Let's see. So, Morten, we've got a 60s Barks story that is not necessarily considered Barks' heyday, you know, his golden age. What are your overall, how do you feel about the Barks stories from the 60s? Do you have any favorites from kind of this era?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, one of the fun parts of getting to be involved in this podcast and just being a listener is getting the chronology correct, because reading these when I was a little child, which was when I was first introduced to them, I didn't really think that much or put them into perspective of each other. So they were all, to me, just Barks stories. I didn't really picture them being like, some of them being 20 years apart, literally speaking. Just up to this point that I've started to reflect on the fact that this is part of he had like career arcs, and this is part of his beyond his golden age, because I this is somewhat of a, I wouldn't call it a personal favorite, but I do hold it in high regard. And so to me, I've always just thought of this as one of his better stories, and not you know, linked it with being part of his when he was past the peak of his powers.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I feel the same way, because like you, I was just gobbling up whatever reprints Gladstone Publishing, in my case, was putting out. And they might put out a 50s story 1 month, and then a 60s story, and then a late 40s story. So it really has taken like this podcast for me to have an idea of that progression. And now I have a much more discerning eye for these stories, and I can just kind of eyeball it and know it. Plus, of course, I'm always just thinking about, okay, which story am I planning right now? But, you know, I do have a much better grasp on the contours of his progression. You mentioned this is kind of a personal, if not favorite, like a choice story for you. I think I probably feel that way too. I read this quite a bit in my dog-eared, in my well-worn reprint. But I was kind of surprised in prepping for this one to realize that contrary to how the early 60s is thought of for Barks, this is actually, it seems to be very well regarded by Barks fans. We'll kind of put a pin in that and come back to it when we talk about the index ratings. But this is a pretty well-liked story. So something that we can think about as we go through it. And let's cover some of the background of That's No Fable. All right. So, Morton, the story was published in October of 1960. So 1960, we're still in kind of that first year of the new decade. That's something that I'm always, you know, thinking about. Feel like there's maybe a little bit of optimism in some of these stories, but this is kind of a cynical one. This one was published in Uncle Scrooge number 32, and then looking on Index, which tells us how widely published it is, this one's seen publication in 17 countries and 103 publications overall, and 8 times in the US, which is about average. So this one seems to be like not a super famous one, but not an unknown story. It is a little bit on the shorter side as far as Barks' adventures go. It clocks in at 18 pages, but that is about average for most stories of this era. There is a little bit of interesting background. So there is a letter from 1960 to Malcolm Willetts. Are you familiar at all with Malcolm Willetts?
Oh, yeah, I don't have any connection with him. His name doesn't ring much of a bell, sadly.
It shouldn't necessarily, but it was kind of... So Malcolm Willetts is like the first fan that tracked Barks down. He was the guy that, if memory serves, he kind of like figured out who the good duck artist was, and was one of the people that was kind of responsible for exposing him to the wider world and some appreciation eventually. And there's a letter to him from that year where Barks is explaining, he's talking a little bit about the interesting structure of this story, how it's going to use this flashback structure with none other than Grandma Duck as kind of a padding, a bookend padding. And he just mentioned why I padded the Ponce de Leon story by having Uncle Scrooge tell it to Grandma. I was trying to get a little variety in the opening. It seemed to me from the business involved that the reader needed to be aware that Scrooge would find the Fountain of Youth. That fountain would have seemed awfully phony if it were dragged into the story along about page 8. Grandma was the gimmick that helped plant the fountain early. So that's interesting. And of course, it introduces the big conceit of this one, which is that idea of the Fountain of Youth. This is a super famous, you know, this is something you'll see in like tons of media across movies, TV shows. I suspect, Morton, that this Uncle Scrooge comic is where I first learned about Ponce de Leon and his actual, this, you know, Spanish conquistador general's fruitless search for the actual Fountain of Youth genuinely in Florida. What do you know about the like true background of it?
Well, in later days, I have learned more about it, naturally, because you come across it so many in references in pop culture. But in the Norwegian edition that I read when I was young, they had exchanged him for a made-up name. So I don't think I got very much of an education from that, sadly.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They didn't come. So that is, but of course, everyone was familiar with the Fountain of Youth, the concept of it. So, and later on, I of course noticed that it was part of a real world legend that actually took place.
Right. And this is a legend that's not just isolated to Florida. You'll find like these legends kind of all over the world. I think if I remember, it goes back like quite a ways, but for whatever reason, it kind of got transported. I think the Spanish had the idea that it must be in Florida somehow. But they had been searching for it for like centuries before. It's Ponce de Leon, but Barks has changed it to Ponce de Lune, which works really well because like the name goes along with waterfowl, like the ducks, right? That's what a loon is. And of course it has the connotation that someone is a loon or a lunatic. So it works on a couple of silly little levels. All right, let's go ahead. We're about to plow into the story itself, but before we do, I always like to pander to the international listeners by tackling a couple of the titles from around the world and seeing if there are any interesting or unique ones. So, Morten, you're hailing from Norway, which means I am going to just stomp all over and grab Norwegian for myself so that you can chuckle at me. So the Norwegian title for this one, at least the first one, is Onkel Skrue og Ungdomsgilden, which you tell me. I know Onkel Skrue is Uncle Scrooge, and then Og must be and. And you told me that big noun is just the Fountain of Youth itself.
Put together to one word, so yeah. And you, I think you got it pretty good. I think on average, if you approached someone on the streets of Oslo, Norway, and just told them, said those words to them, they would understand what you were saying, though of course it would probably seem very odd to them to strike right. a conversation that way.
Yeah, asking for directions to the Fountain of Youth. Why don't you give me the proper pronunciation really quick?
Onkel Skrue og Ungdomsgilden.
All right, what are you going to take a crack at?
Well, I think the Netherlands one is solid. I have no idea how to pronounce it, so that makes it a lot of fun. And I'll give it my best shot, and apologies in advance to anyone from Holland hearing this. Upsuk nær de brønn der øvige jord, in search of the source of eternal youth. So yeah, I probably hacked it to pieces, but
I think it's probably better than I could have done. But thanks for making a go of it. I'll also do one more. I like the one from Spain, and of course, you know, there are some Spanish characters here, so might as well. We've got una fábula fabulosa, which is a fabulous fable. I think that's a great title because it captures some of the like tone of that's no fable, and it gets some nice alliteration. Fábula fabulosa. That's great. Strongly approve. So, what do you think, Morten? You ready to tackle this story to head to the Everglades?
Yeah, I'm all for it.
All right. So right off the bat, That's No Fable has a pretty striking opening here, right? I'll stop before we really start just to ask you, how do you feel about the Duck family matriarch, Grandma Duck here?
Yeah, I think you just recently sent me, I've never read it in the original language before you sent me a copy earlier. So in English, she has her words has a lot more flavor than in Norwegian, because the Norwegian translation, I have to say, it's pretty boring. They've cut down the length of her sentences, and she's just basically exclaiming things like, "Well, I don't believe it," and so here she has, of course, a lot more color to her phrases. And I think it's a pretty striking depiction of her, and I think it's a lot of fun to see her get involved in the everyday life and being away from her farm and being down visiting Duckburg and the money bin.
Yeah. I really like, I mean, I think this is one of my favorite parts of this story, is just the fact that we've got Grandma Duck randomly plunked into this adventure story. I mean, she's not like along for the ride. She's just a framing device, but it's cute seeing her. We've got her sitting on a money bag in the money bin talking to Scrooge while he's counting, and the nephews are playing very cutely with some of the money. It is neat seeing her out of the farm. I really like Grandma Duck. I enjoy some of the like farm friend stories, you know. They weren't always written by Barks. He may have only drawn some of them, but they're really sweet. She's a fun character, and I like Barks didn't do that well with female characters in general. Like, I don't really like his characterization of Daisy Duck, but I almost always enjoy his characterization of Grandma Duck. So I think it's great. I love her as this framing device here.
Yeah, I think it works.
And so, again, I mentioned that she's basically here to set things up. She is going to be like the exasperated foil to Scrooge's like obstinate refusal to tell the whole story except in dribs and drabs about what happened. Because she's referencing some reading that she was doing recently about the Fountain of Youth. She mentions Pontsy D. Loon as like a distant cousin of the ducks, which then that part, it doesn't feel like he needs to be a distant cousin. That feels, I guess maybe it's why she would be talking to Scrooge about him. But she's referencing, you know, of this legend, and Scrooge is just kind of casually acknowledging, oh yes, that was in Florida in 1513. Like, he's telling you he knows a lot about this, and he's being very placid and inscrutable about it. And she's kind of despairing how wonderful it would have been if De Lune had found the actual fountain. I get the impression that, you know, this is a little bit melancholy, right? Because Grandma Duck is, of course, an older duck. So there's the kind of like undertone that maybe she's thinking about her mortality. And Scrooge says he missed it by 3 miles, a very specific number, while he's also counting his billions. And Grandma references, well, of course, that story that led him to search for such a fantastic thing was only a fable. You know, we're going to get this invocation a few times. And Scrooge actually pauses his money counting here to say, let me tell you, Grandma, there was a Fountain of Youth, and that's no fable. And the nephews pipe in and say that Donald saw it as well, and that Scrooge actually had the opportunity to buy it for $40. And so Grandma, you know, she naturally thinks they're trying to pull one over on her, but they insist that it could have been done. And on to the next page, Scrooge, when she asks why he didn't buy that most valuable piece of real estate, he told her because the price was too high. And that's no fable. And so we have, you know, Grandma kind of breaking down a little bit and bemoaning how frugal Scrooge is. And this is going to set us up, Morton, for the ducks to tell the whole story. I love how this is framed. You know, it's like telling the reader, all right, we've teased this, you know the outcome, but now we're gonna give you the whole explanation. And I like this story's repeated invocation of the line, that's no fable. It's a great thing to do in a short story like this, you know, to kind of develop a sense of continuity. How about you? What are your thoughts on this opening, you know, 1.5 page sequence?
I think it works really excellently. As I mentioned, in Norwegian, That's No Fable isn't the title of the story. So, of course, that isn't repeated in the word balloons either. So that part I missed out on when reading it. And I just got to experience that a few hours ago when I reread it in English. But I think this works tremendously well. It really piques the interest. And they're playing off of Scrooge being such a miser that Grandma Duck obviously immediately assumes he didn't want to buy it because of the price, but then we know that there has to be something other than that that's the reason. So our interest is piqued, and we want to get into the meat of it and find out what's really behind this.
Right. Yeah, I think what you said is key. This is very good at piquing your interest. And it is very good character-based humor, because it is what we know about Scrooge. But even then, we've got more to the tale. It is interesting to me to hear from international readers, listeners, what they missed in English. All right. So Grandma Duck asks the question, Yes, Scrooge McDuck, what have you to say for yourself? And then we're going to launch into this really extended flashback. This is a pretty rare story in that it's being told in the past tense. And this part is great. This informed this along with Mystery of the Swamp, his early adventure story with the Gneasels. This informed so much of what I thought about Florida and the Everglades. But this one is much more a concern with modern Florida. We've got the ducks down doing some sightseeing, looking after some of Scrooge's big deals, rather. And he indicates that he's in the mood for building cities. So he goes to a real estate agent. What's the real estate agent's name?
He's called J. Slick Land Dealer.
Yes, it's a great little title for a guy who looks like he absolutely wants to rip you off. This scene is pretty much like a little one-panel remake of the same sort of moment from Land of the Pygmy Indians, right? When Scrooge is visiting Sidewalk Sam, it's almost the same perspective, the same gag with a bunch of real estate signs, you know, 2 acres with shack, $50,000, split level house, alligators in lower level, $300,000 is slightly obscured. So I love how much Barks has absolutely nailed this Florida man here, right? He's wearing a loud Hawaiian shirt. He's wearing I'm not sure of the name of that wide-brimmed hat. He's chomping a cigar. He just screams like Florida land development shyster guy. And this is one of those things that Florida's famous for, right? It's the state has literally been doing exactly what Barks is making fun of here for decades. They've been draining swamps and building cities. I think this is really, really informative from a historical and social perspective. This man offers to sell Scrooge in Dismal Ooze Swamp a 40-acre plot for $40. You know, the problem here is that it's far from the main road, but this guy points out, who wants roads? In Florida, people use boats. I mean, we got a little bit of an exaggeration here. I'm sure our Florida readers can, you know, tell us about their traffic jams. But you know, the idea is intact here. And so this guy fills Scrooge's like thoughts with he's really priming Scrooge, telling him you find an area in the swamp that you can dredge a levee around, pump the water out, and build a city. And boy, Morton, this is like what the U.S. has done. And it's the reason that Hurricane Katrina was such a disaster when the levees failed. The guy says, then you sell the 40 acres that cost you $40 for $40 million. And he says, half the cities in Florida were built that way. And that's barely an exaggeration. This is great. I think this is just wonderful setup. I love how loud and awful seeming this guy is. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it adds a lot of local color to the story. And, you know, reading it from the international perspective, I also assumed and believed fully that this was how things were done. And it's America. Everything's bigger and everything's grander. And, you know, and everything seems very exotic to me from Norway. But
right. And it's hard to like really impress upon people how much the business of the U.S. in this era really was just this kind of like baby boom, building cities, leveling other neighborhoods to build housing projects and stuff. Oh boy, I love that panel too. I've got to make note, I might already have one of my favorite panels. Jay Slick holding Scrooge up to his level, exhorting him about his opportunity here. That's wonderful.
Well, I do love all the times when Barks emphasizes the size of the ducks, you know, them being just, you know, so minuscule in stature that a regular human can, or, you know, the dog-nosed humans can just lift them up, and he's like hanging there and looking really, really blissful.
Yeah. Hey, tell us about the actual business transaction.
Of course, that's the premise from the story we're getting here, that he's not going to pay up front, Scrooge. He wants to check out the locals before he buys them. So they're going to go out to the swamp to survey it before they come back. So that's of course where we're starting to get. If you just paid for it, then everything would have been resolved. But that's not
exactly if Scrooge McDuck had just forked over $40 sight unseen. You know, that's not how he does his deals though, and it's generally served him well. But $40, we can roughly times 12 this, or we're into the 60s. We can probably times 10 this. We're talking about $400 to $450 here. And so we're going to transition to the swamp itself. I love the Everglades. Part of this is just I love the couple of stories that Barks did set in the Everglades. But I've always been a swamp guy and an alligators guy. So love this sequence. I will say this depiction of the Everglades is much more accurate than his first time around when he did Mystery of the Swamp with the Gneasels. But that story, which is so bonkers, is one of my very favorite early Barks adventures. So I love that very mysterious version of it. This one is going to have its own mysteries, but it feels much more like in broad daylight. So as the ducks are going through the swamp, we're having a little bit of a conversation about Ponce de Lune. I really just enjoy all of these, you know, the swamp boat patrolling through these little lagoons. It's really lovely. And they're making for a donut-shaped lagoon that's going to identify the center of Scrooge's bit of property. There is a little reference to, you know, the fact that nobody has actually stood on any of this ground since Ponce de Lune.
You know, when I traveled to the United States, my mind was very much set on going on a trip to see the swamps, and we did travel on one of the same type of boats with the big fan in the back. I don't know the name of them in English, but we did of course travel in one of those and saw all the alligators. And I have to believe that stories like these were what was priming me for wanting to experience that in real life. And it was a great way. And when I come back now and reread this after having actually been there and been exposed to that sort of setting myself, it adds a new dimension to it, because I can actually feel like the heat of the swamp and the humid temperature, and you know, and I think Barks did a great way of depicting it. It really feels authentic.
Yeah, I agree. I have to say his geography stuff, this little like donut lagoon, the times when he does these neat little geographic features like the circular reef in Ghost of the Grotto, for example, they really draw me in a way. Like the map, you know, the hook-shaped lake in Land of the Pygmy Indians, those little touches, they really draw me in and they really make me feel connected to this story in a way that I really appreciate. So by and by, they do come along to that very notable feature, and Scrooge is liking what he sees as he surveys this land. He's talking about how there's enough dry grounds to use for levees, which are like the big earthen berms, I think, that prevent water from going where you don't want it to when you develop, but they won't last forever. But he likes it, and he's even talking about how the lovely lagoon could make a perfect park for the center of the city. He talks about building a monument to Ponce de Lune on it. And Donald points out a modest little spring on the island that they could even pretend is the Fountain of Youth. And Scrooge proposes having some young boys in old Spanish armor stomping around the fountain, that Donald says you can ballyhoo them as being survivors of Ponce de Lune's army. What is it, Morton, that a nephew is gonna point out?
Well, they're going to point out that somebody beat him to it, and of course that whatever Scrooge was fantasizing about is very much on the nose, because they, in the next panel, they see a couple of young boys in Spanish armor and helmets being there already.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is a really cool panel. I remember the story isn't exactly scary, but there is like a sort of an air of mystery that is a little bit unsettling to this, right? Because of the like concerned look on those boys' face and how out of place they look. And then, you know, Barks doesn't really ever draw teenagers, I would say, right? They look to me, they look like they're like teen or young teen or preteen is kind of how I'm reading them, right? Somewhere in the neighborhood of like 13. What do you peg them as?
Yeah, I'd say something along the same ages, maybe like at the most 14, 15. So I also consider them to be just somewhat older than the nephews.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of crystallizing for me. We don't usually see teenagers in Bark stories, so that's something that also sets them apart. And they disappear really quickly. Donald comments that they seemed scared, and Scrooge is starting to think that someone is pulling his leg, you know, setting him up for some kind of a prank. So they're gonna kind of reconnoiter. Donald wants Louis or Huey to run around and see if you can find where they're hiding. Scrooge wants Donald to get the like fold up paddle boat so they can row out and see what's going on. And they both, you know, Scrooge would also like to take a close look at the fountain. And so we kind of transition here for a moment to Donald. Do you want to tell us about what's going on with Donald here?
Yeah, he's getting the paddle boat from the vehicle that got them to the little island, and he's thinking to himself, I wonder if those boys have been here for a long time, and that's also, you know, a nice piece of table setting from Barks, because that gives us a little bit of an indication, since we're doing a Fountain of Youth story and they've talked about Ponce de Leon, Loon being there since 1513. So you're starting to get the contours of where Barks is steering the direction of the story. And of course, Donald can't do a simple task like this without getting in some sort of trouble. So he thinks to himself something about alligators not having gotten the boys if they've been there for a while. But as he does so, he is running along the back of a rather large alligator.
Yeah, it's a fun bit of slapstick. I like how the gator is drawn. I like what Donald says. He says, you'd think the state would do something about those hungry menaces. And I've got to chuckle, because the state of Florida like famously almost drove the American alligator to extinction for a while, because like people were allowed to hunt them without quotas. Alligator handbags were all the rage, and they were like endangered for a little while. And then they embarked on like a control program that now they're thriving. So they get away from the alligator there, and Scrooge, I love Scrooge's line here, I'll have to make valises out of those varmints before I build my city. Just a nice bit of alliteration there. So the ducks paddle across the lagoon, right? It's a good thing that they navigated it this way. That's only going to become clear in hindsight. What do you mind telling us, Morton, a little bit about what they encounter on and around the little island?
Yeah, it's a very neat piece of exploration from Barks here, because they start to see a little sort of garden spot. So it's indicated that they've been growing their own foodstuffs right there locally, very short traveled. So they can't find the boys. That's a little bit of a mystery as well. And I think we're going to get into this at the end, I expect, why this story is so well liked, but I think it's because it has a lot of minor elements that echoes some of his more famous stories, because this does give me a little bit of shades of Ghost of the Grotto, where they also come to a deserted island where someone appears to have been living, but you know, they can't see them, so, and they live hidden in plain sight, sort of, so to speak.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, right? Because I'm getting shades of Ghost of the Grotto too, which is an all-time favorite of mine. Just the whole structure of this in the middle of this lagoon, the little raised island, the fact that they're going to be eventually found living underneath it. It really evokes it. And the fact that, again, we've got like he's an English explorer, but, you know, same era here.
Yeah, and Scrooge naturally has to take a taste of the little spring they noticed from afar. And it really does have quite the effect on him. This has to be some of the funniest panels of the story. Scrooge exclaiming, "Man, man, that juice is the real end." And he's dancing quite frivolously.
Yeah, this is like age-old humor. Right, older characters acting very young. This feels like Barks trying to use some kind of hep talk. We're into the beginning of the 60s, so we're not yet into kind of like all the hippie speak. We're still kind of, but this definitely sounds like him trying to use some like almost counterculture young people lingo here. I love that next page where he's like, as you say, dancing recklessly, his feet are moving a mile a minute. He says, "I'm cured of my rheumatism. I feel young and reckless. I want to own this spring." So this is an interesting element here, right? Because it's pretty clear to the readers what's going on, but the ducks don't yet understand.
Yeah. It's basically given away. You know, the whole plot is fully explored to everyone reading this now, but we still want to know how it comes to be that he doesn't end up owning it in the end of the story. So the mystery of what goes wrong is still to come.
Right. Yes. The mystery of the swamp, as it were. And we get this kind of eerie moment here where the ducks are about to head out so Scrooge can buy the 40 acres, but Louis is missing. And, one of the nephews says, "He might have met an alligator," which to me was pretty striking this time. But we see the other two nephews disappear one by one into little holes in this little raised spot. And so now it's just Scrooge and Donald, and they head off, you know, crossing the raft because they're intending to kind of like regroup. I'm okay with the fact that they're not too concerned. They know that something like, I think they reasonably suspect that it's connected to those boys, and that there's something like a hidden trap door. And so we do see as they paddle off, intending to get some tools to, quote, rip the whole roof off that island. We see one of the boys emerge and say, "Parada inglesa." So parada is like the noun form of stop. It's a stopping in Spanish, and inglesa means an Englishman. So this is not quite like proper Spanish Barks is using, because he's not using the verb form here. It feels to me like he had an English Spanish dictionary and he looked up the word stop, and parada is stop. So he's at least trying here. And Scrooge knows Spanish well enough to raise his hand, but Donald lunges at him, saying he must think we're going for the Marines, the tin-plated delinquent, and he hits the old-time gun with his oar, and that ends up popping the life raft. So at this point, the ducks, you know, they don't realize it yet. They're trapped without realizing it. Although Scrooge is kind of wondering if this is some kind of calamity. Yeah, Donald's trying to pry the lid of the island open, and he asks Scrooge to carry on while he swims after the tools. But then he sees the alligator, he sees Scrooge has disappeared, and we're gonna have this fun little fight sequence with him hitting the different arms of the boys, kind of like a whack-a-mole game, before we transition down beneath the island. Morton, why don't you tell us about this next sequence down beneath where I'm sure you and I are both getting massive callback feelings for Ghosts of the Grotto.
Yeah, exactly. This really does evoke Ghosts of the Grotto, and when they get trapped inside this enclosed island space with their captors being in full suits of armor, and they try to fight them off in some way, and the fight scene here is quite fun and quite action filled, I'd say, with Scrooge using his pen and his staff there to fight the boys and try it, and discovering that the gun they're using is an old matchlock for a type of gun from Ponce de Leon's time.
Right, and that's gonna cause the boys to stop because he quote speaks the name of their commander, and they ask if he knows of his fortunes. We've got some pretty good convincing, you know, old-timey speak going on here, and so Scrooge is asking, you know, how did you muchachos get hold of this ancient museum piece? And they say that this was issued to them by Capitan Ponce de Leon when they landed in the New World to seek the magical fountain of youth. It feels perfect here that we kind of like lunge out of the flashback, right?
Yeah, you need to do that to you know, remind the readers that, and just, you know, keep Grandma Duck in the loop, so to speak, and remind us that this is them retelling the story of something that happened in the past.
Right. Yeah, because Grandma is going to cut in, and the ducks tell her, yeah, they were 40 years old men when they ventured into the swamp, and they say the smooth faces will come later. And we get this neat further flashback, I guess. We've got a flashback kind of within the flashback into the 16th century, I guess. And the scouts, we follow these two boys when they were men, scouts named Pablo and Pedro, who are just doing some exploration. And we see them wade across the lagoon. Barks does a neat trick where we see their front face as they start wading. And by the time they get into the island and are talking about the great comfort that the water gives them, we only see them from the back perspective. So it's a neat little reveal, even if the reader has almost certainly kind of figured it out by now that they emerge without their beards. They've become younger boys and have realized indeed that this is the fountain of youth, of legend. And they're so excited, but there is a holdup, Morton. What is the hitch, as it were?
Oh, well, the holdup is, of course, that I'd say that they were maybe in their 40s, maybe at the most early 50s, because they're depicted with still having, you know, black beards. They haven't gone gray in the hair yet. So say that they were 45 and just wading across made them lose 30 years or so, going back to teenagers. So if they were to go all the way back again, they would be babies or worse, I guess, if they managed to get all the way across to the other side.
Yeah, this is like a very familiar trope in storytelling, right? Anytime there's going to be an encounter with a fountain of youth of some kind, there's usually going to be this paradox where you're trapped by it, or you're forced to reckon with the fact that you can only age down. So the mystery, that part of the mystery is kind of solved. And Bark's narrator box tells us, so for nearly 4.5 centuries, Pedro and Pablo lived there unseen on the tiny island until we ducks came paddling across the lagoon. And the boys at this point, they realize, you know, the ducks are not there to fight them, that they are now marooned just as helplessly as they are. I guess we'll get into some of the existential stuff in a little in a moment, because here Scrooge is going to realize that Donald was on the verge of swimming across the lagoon, and we get a really neat little just in the nick of time moment where he stops him, but Donald refuses to believe him. What do you think of the last panel on this page here? Do you want to read what Scrooge tells Donald after he yanks him.
Yeah, he says, you're too young, Donald. Before you reach the other bank, you'd be turned into an egg.
What do you think? What are your thoughts on that line?
Well, I think, of course, it matches what the aging process that Barbox outlined in with the Spaniards, that is approximately what would happen, because Donald must be in his 30s, I assume.
Sure. And
so if that's roughly what it did, crossing the pond took off them, the Spaniards. So, but of course, it would be fun to see how the actual exile came to be.
Right. Does it feel weird? Like, you know, Barks really does go out of his way most of the time to like treat these characters like humans. But then here we have him canonically talking about them hatching from eggs. It is definitely one of those reminders, huh?
I think it's a very fun turn of phrase from Scrooge to use that way to put it.
Right. And here we've got one of those moments where Donald really should believe them, because we've got all like four characters telling him that this is the Fountain of Youth, and there's some pretty good evidence suggesting it. But this is just one of those tropes where a character has to see it play out. So this is also a very fun excuse to like bring back that alligator from earlier and have him shrink on the way across the lagoon until he's been turned into a little hissing baby and just nips Donald on the foot. It's a very fun sequence. I like it a lot.
Yeah, that's absolutely adorable, him hissing and nipping him in the webbed feet there.
Yeah. Morton, this next page is kind of one of the ones that I think about the most when I think of this story, because it's tonally, I think it's pretty weird, right? What this is, the ducks are essentially trapped with these two boys in this like really awful, just nightmarish kind of hell scenario, right? Like, this is terrible. If you're trapped on this tiny little plot of land, somehow these boys have amassed like the seeds over, we imagine, the centuries to like plant a garden. Great. But I mean, this is just a recipe for like the worst kind of torture, I think. You're stuck on this little plot with nothing but your thoughts and like this one other dude that maybe you become friends with over the voyage. I don't know. Maybe they become more over the centuries, whatever. It's a long 400 and some years. But Barks does not want this to be hellish, right? He doesn't want them to be like trapped in this terrible situation. So like, it's not like Ghost of the Grotto, where when you think about the situation, the undertones are like really dire of these generations of men kidnapping boys every 50 years and otherwise being trapped in solitude. The way that he kind of writes this, you know, bats it away, is that the fountain water itself doesn't just keep you young in body and young at heart. It also seems like the implication is that it's keeping you alive without needing more food than they're getting in that garden. And it keeps you happy. Every time they drink from it, they feel delighted. One of the nephews takes a little sip and says, "One swallow makes me feel like doing cartwheels." And they say, "Pedro and I have been doing cartwheels for 400 and umpty years, and we've never had an unhappy moment." So that's meant to like make Scrooge really want this all that much more. But it's also meant to prevent the reader from, I think, fully pondering the like existential angst and desolation of this situation. And as much as I love this story, that little bit of hand waving is not enough for me.
No. When you read this as a grown-up, of course, there are a lot of connotations that totally went over my head when I was a kid reading it. When I was reading this as a kid, you know, you don't give it much thought. You take it at face value, what Barks presents you with. But this, I have a lot of things to say about this, the theme here on this page. I like to think sometimes, you know, you like to do thought experiments. And yeah, because I'm not much of a believer in anything supernatural. But I like to do thought experiments, of course, and see, let's say a supernatural entity were to give me a bargain, say, if you don't eat anything unhealthy, you can have 50 more years of, of a long life. And, you know, would I want that? Would I want to not eat anything, you know, chocolate cake, anything I really like to eat, drop my coffee at work and anything, if that meant I could live longer? Or would that be like a not much of a trade-off? And of course, that's not just a hypothetical question, because we do encounter these choices in our everyday lives. We don't think about it that way. But every time you choose to do something unhealthy, you are whittling away days of your life. So I think the theme here is quite interesting to explore. And I think it's the older you get, the more you get to appreciate the depths of it.
Yes, yes. I think that's really well said. This one is so ripe for these kinds of thought experiments, right? Like that's where my mind is going as well. My mind, tell me about you, but I also this time around couldn't, And I suspect when I was originally reading this, I couldn't help but try to think, how could you get off that island, right? You've got armor, you've got your old timey gun, you've got whatever knowledge you have as a Spaniard from 400 years ago, and a lot of time on your hands. I'm like, do you think you could even wait for like some trees to grow up over the decades and like be ready for hurricane season to maybe just gradually collect enough wood? I mean, I guess the implication here is these guys are so happy that they're not going to like even try to quote escape, right? This is paradise for them. I'm saying that like Barks hasn't presented this convincingly enough as paradise for me, but like, you know, if this is something like LSD, some form of drug that really does like alter your mind enough that you feel blissful, who am I to judge? I just, when presented the way it is, this feels pretty horrific to me.
And I think it's the question of eternal life. I mean, these guys are trapped on an island, and that's what the price they're paying for getting to live forever. But I mean, would you want to live forever even if you weren't trapped on an island? I mean, after like right. a couple of thousand years, you'd probably start to get kind of bored. So, and maybe take just being alive for granted. So, you know, that is the big trade-off in these existentialistic questions.
Right. That's not what Barks is like. That's not what he wants to ponder in this one. That's us just really extrapolating. The whole purpose of this is now Scrooge is... He's got his typical dollar signs at this opportunity, talking about what a rich find it is and how he can bottle the water and sell it to people. And Donald happily points out, and it's all yours, Uncle Scrooge, if you pay the balance of that $40 by Friday. And that's the moment where Scrooge realizes he too is trapped, but he's not going to be able to do it. He can't get back. And they point out the very important detail. Hey, Scrooge himself is an old man. He is padded with enough years that he would, as an FU says, still be old enough to vote when he got to the other side. Morton, what's the hitch?
The hitch being that Scrooge, even though he is, as we just touched upon, he is a duck. He is a very slow swimmer.
So I love this. It's very funny. It's a very great way to like deftly, it's a funny way to navigate this obvious solution, right? Now, for my part, I'm thinking, why doesn't Scrooge ask those two boys and Donald to just give him the heave-ho? He's a small duck. They could throw him like 3/4 of the way across the island. But I mean, if you really wanted to, you could poke holes in that and say, oh, Scrooge is too concerned. What if he gets injured and he reverts back to an egg? The bottom line is it's meant to be funny, and it's meant to check this obvious solution, and it does it very deftly. It is very funny. It is a great narrative trope solution.
Yeah, it's a great punchline for his stinginess and not wanting to pay the money up front and then having the problem resolved. And but on the other hand, we can get back to how the story is concluded later on. So, but yeah. But I think it works excellently for the narrative plot.
Right, it is delightful. So at this point, we are going to flash back to Grandma. Who is continuing to kind of be the surrogate for the reader listening to this story. And she says, "You didn't swim the lagoon then, Scrooge?" And he says, "No, I knew I would reach the other side an egg. And that was too high a price to pay for even the fountain of youth." So, of course, that is the price that he's been referring to the whole time. But, of course, we had to kind of dance around it for narrative sake. And Grandma thinks that clearly there must be more to the story. So what happened next at that point, she asks. And why don't you tell us, Morton, what happened?
Well, the next part is that the ducks are, they've been there for a couple of days just waiting, and then they see the water starting to drain and the spring going dry, and they notice it's a huge dredger is ripping a channel through the swamp. So that is, of course, how they are getting rescued by the real estater, Jay Slick.
Right. Yes, Jay Slick himself apparently liked his own sales pitch so much that when Scrooge didn't come back, he came to do exactly what he said, drain and dredge the swamp and build a city. And so, you know, the ducks are saved, but at what cost? I'll say it's definitely pretty heartrending to see the level of the water go down. You know, you really feel that. You imagine, we don't really refer to what became of those boys, but you imagine that this is going to be absolutely devastating for them, right? They've lost their eternal life. They have to like come to terms with the modern age. But this is meant to be a pretty brisk, breezy, funny Scrooge adventure. So Scrooge yells at him, "You've cut the underground source of the Fountain of Youth and dried up the most valuable spring in the world." And we get this very funny exchange between him and like his mechanic who says, "Every greenhorn who gets swamp fever thinks he's found a fountain of youth." And they even dismiss the armored boys as sad cases too. And so that's it. You know, they wrap up their story. They wrap up our story. They went their own way and nobody believes the us ducks or Pedro and Pablo. And we do get Donald pointing out that, you know, technically it was too small to have, quote, de-wrinkled many folks. And what is the funny little capper panel at the end there, Morton?
The capper is that Grandma Duck asks him about the city being raised there and what the city was called. And he replies that it was called Jay Slick's, had he got the idea from me, Ponzi de Loonville. So almost the same name Scrooge was considering.
Right. And the reason that this is funny, right, is because of that double meaning where a loon is like a lunatic. So Jay Slick is clearly playing on the local legend, but also naming it after Scrooge in this cheeky little bit of name calling. That's probably something that doesn't carry over in many of the translations. And it's a shame because it's quite fun. So that's it. That's no fable. I sure really enjoyed overthinking this one with you, Morton, maybe a little more than normal, because there's a lot of these kind of weird thought exercises to think. What are your kind of overall thoughts on it?
Well, I'll just say this to the credit of Jay Slick, that as you mentioned, he did believe his own sales pitch. He wasn't just trying to pull a fast one on Scrooge. He obviously felt that this was a valuable prospect to explore on his own. And I think the circular argument here is naturally that if Scrooge had paid him in advance, then he wouldn't have come out there, and they might have been stuck there for years and years, maybe even as long as the Spanish soldiers would have been.
Right, exactly. You know, it's interesting that both Jay Slick and Sidewalk Sam, despite being like portrayed as cheating, you know, shysters, they sell some pretty good, like legitimate properties in both this and Land. Like it is the property is as he bills it, you know?
Yeah, so they might be hustlers in some respect, but in this regard, they actually were as good as they were.
Right, exactly. I sure do enjoy this story. I see where it kind of sags under the weight of some of its like little loose ends here and there. But a lot of them really can be written off by the purpose of the story. It is meant to be fun. It is meant to be very lighthearted. I love the Florida localization of it. I think Barks nailed Florida dead to rights years before like our modern idea. I mean, obviously people have thought these things about Florida for a long time, but it just seems more and more prescient to me. I love Grandma. I think it would have been awesome to see Grandma in more of these adventure-length stories. I'm delighted to see her. I've gotten to spend so little time with her in relative terms on the podcast. So I really enjoy this story. I am a little bit baffled at how well-liked it is on Index. You know, we can transition to talking about the community reception here. I like to use Index as kind of a stand-in for how people feel about these stories. Because you can vote, and they aggregate quite a few votes. And this one has a 7.96 overall on Index, which is good as of right now for a rank. So it's rank 44 on Index. So Morten, this is a top 50 overall story as far as Index voters go. And then just like looking at just the Barks adventures, yeah, if you take out the stories, the other creators who have stories in the top 50, it's in the top 30 roughly. Interestingly, on that list, it is right next to Ghost of the Grotto. And that's where I take issue with it, right? Because like you and I both thought about Ghost of the Grotto so much because there's so much to evoke that story. This is not Barks like doing a remake, but it is him just reusing some elements of a story. And I am baffled that people, A, don't have Ghost of the Grotto higher than it is, because I love that story so much. And then that this would be like, people would think that the two stories are equal to each other really is surprising to me, because when you think about them next to each other, that is not how they strike me. Now I'm not denigrating this story at all. I think it is a very strong Barks adventure. It has a lot going for it. You know, this cool like setting. The setting is phenomenal. The ideas that come with it, I think, are really great. I think it's just also very memorable. It has a good hook, and people tend to vote higher, I think, for the stories that have quite the hook. But yeah, I'm gonna say it. As much as I do like this story, and I really like this one, this is a little bit of a case of overrating. What about you?
Yeah, I think the two main reasons that it is so highly regarded is that it latches onto an established concept in real life and in popular culture, the Fountain of Youth, much like the Mines of Solomon. I think people just have a preconceived notion of he gets a lot of lifting done for free by just using that concept that everyone knows and has a relation to. And I for my part, I think it's such a cool adventure story because it's exploring something that I have a lot of associations with. My mind jumps to a lot of associations, and it probably adds a lot to the mystery that isn't part of Barks's actual story, because I know about the story from other sources. And I think the other reason that it's well liked is because not just the shades of Ghost of the Grotto, but also you can see references to Pygmy Indians, the Gneasels, there's so many of his other stories that you find these little, you get the associations and you sort of get the same vibrations and the good feelings that those stories gave you when you read them. So that also helps elevate this story.
He's kind of doing the greatest hits almost, yeah. Right? Yeah. I think you're on to something there. I'm gonna amend what I said. I It's not that I think this is overrated, because it probably in the top 40 or so is, that's probably like about where it belongs. I really just do think that Ghost to the Grotto belongs up a bit higher. This is a very strong Barks adventure, though, and I like how unique it is. I think this one's a lot of fun, and there is a lot to speak to it. A lot to really appreciate. Yeah, I think that I got to say my piece about this one. I think we did a nice job covering it.
Yeah, that's I'm more than pleased with what we covered, and I think it was a great story. I was very happy to be invited to do this particular story because of all the, you know, the adult themes that we can explore reading it now. I read this to my son. He's 7 years old. I've read it a lot of times to him. And he, of course, he doesn't catch on any of those things. He just thinks it's right. Neat with the Fountain of Youth concept and with the kids in armor and stuff. But I'll appreciate coming back in 20 years' time and discussing this story with him and see if he's grown in the same way that I have in his approach to it.
Yeah, that's great. There are definitely a lot of fun little elements with the, as you say, the armor and the alligator and everything. All right. So we're going to take it home here. I will note that, you know, this isn't one that I am aware of any major sequels to or anything, but there was a DuckTales episode in the second run of DuckTales that was concerned with not the Fountain of Youth, but there was like a reverse Fountain of Youth, a Fountain of Aging in it. And Ponce, and there was like a lion character, Ponce de Leon, because Leon is lion in Spanish. So I didn't see any direct references to That's No Fable. At least memory doesn't, according to my memory, there weren't. But I thought I'd mention it because DuckTales is based on Barks and That's No Fable is pretty famous. So I don't want to forget, though, to before we wrap it up, are there any panels that you would like to go to bat for, Morten?
Yeah, I think we touched upon them when going through it. Jay Slick, the lifting Scrooge, is definitely one of the better ones.
Yeah.
The little alligator hissing at Donald, and Scrooge doing the dance, claiming to be cured of his rheumatism. Those three are probably the ones that stood out the most to me. And yeah, some of the fighting with the soldiers inside the cavern is also quite fun.
Yeah, I think you pretty much nailed them. I think I'll basically co-sign onto what you say. I do think fondly of the one that shows the spring going dry and the water level going down. I think that's a very sad, sad moment there. But yeah, let's go ahead and call this one. This one's in the can. Let's see. Thank you, listeners, for joining us for this great discussion. A couple of grown men talking about all the ramifications here. Hopefully people... Oh, that DuckTales episode was called The Forbidden Fountain of the Forever Glades. People should check out Bark's Remarks on the various socials, mostly Facebook, but we dabble on Instagram a bit as well. And come back next episode. Our next adventure length story is going to be Billions in the Hole. Morten, once again, thank you. It's been a delight.
Yeah, likewise. And always a pleasure to be here.